Welcome back to the show. You're here with me, Carol Jane Whittington. I am the Chief Energy Officer at Whittington Wellbeing, and we are here at Beyond Chronic Burnout talking all things burnout today with my incredible, fantastic, fabulous, amazing, oh my gosh, love our guest today. So my guest is a darling friend. We are both in ProFound, which is the Disability Leadership Network, and Vaughn Harris is just incredible. Vaughn is an advertising production professional currently based in New York City, and I got to meet him and sit next to him as we had breakfast together when I visited New York City in December. And oh my gosh, y'all, I can't tell you how excited I was to get to sit next to Vaughn. I was like, did I just win the lottery? The Swiss Army knife of the advertising industry. Vaughn runs a tight ship as diversity, equity, and inclusion specialist at TBWA New York. Vaughn is also a podcaster, motivational speaker, and a certified life coach with a passion for social justice and inclusion for all. He's become an outspoken advocate for people with disabilities. And today, we're going to be talking about an element of burnout that you may not have thought about before. We want to stop missing this area of burnout and its accessibility burnout. It's an area that I don't think is nearly talked about enough. It is something that no matter my client's ability or disability, this is something we talk about, is the accessibility within your life, because it costs us energy. It costs us physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual heart energy when those accessibility things that we need to be able to operate at our optimum every day are constantly being barricaded, aren't available, are difficult to navigate, or take us three times as long to do. Like Vaughn recently had an experience where it would have taken maybe an hour for him to get home, but because there wasn't an elevator that was working at a couple of stops, it took him 3 hours to get home. And it was like 2 o'clock in the morning. Guys, this is the kind of stuff and more we're going to be diving into, because accessibility is something we all have an accessibility that we need within our life. But there are a lot of us that have different or have accessibility things. Like for me, I have auditory processing delay. So captions are really important for me. And I can't tell you how many times, especially late in the day when I really have a much harder time processing auditory information, that those simple things like closed captions on a meeting aren't available. And it costs me so much more energy to try and follow along with the conversation. So I'm really excited to bring on my guest. Help me welcome my fabulous friend, Vaughn Harris. Vaughn, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Carol Jean. I'm honored to be here. I love the intro music, by the way. It made me feel happy. It was like Sesame Street. I love it.
The first time I heard that, when I was going through, like, okay, we had like the production thing, like choose songs and that kind of stuff. And I was like, I want something that's fun, that's energizing, that's light, that's playful. I want it to sound like me. That's it.
Yeah, you did it. You found the perfect song.
I love it. And you know, that's actually part of kinetic rest. And I teach that as part of the unveiling method. And one of the ways that we can tap into kinetic rest is through music and dance.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And when we hear something like that, it changes your mood, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, that's fun. And you kind of do a little dance to it. It makes you smile. And that changes your energy.
Absolutely. And it definitely did for me. Thank you so much.
Oh, I love that. Vaughn, like what's your favorite song right now? Like what's on repeat? What are you listening to right now?
What is on repeat? I have several playlists that I play throughout the day and several times during the week. Right now I've been listening to a lot of old school jazz music. It's been something I've been pulled into. Like I'm a big fan of like John Coltrane. And so I've been listening to a lot of his music, Miles Davis, you know, Rebirth of Cool and that kind of old school style. My father was a big fan of it. And we used to listen to it around the house a lot. And so this last few weeks, I've been pulled into listening to older music a lot.
I love that. It's interesting. My dad's musical taste really influenced mine too. It's like, absolutely. I love jazz. I love like the old classic original jazz, you know, but then I really got into and really love, like it's from the 80s, roughly late 70s, 80s, George Benson.
Yes. Give me the night and all those things.
Give me the night. Oh my gosh. Yep. Yes, that's one of my favorite. Yeah. I mean, and then you know, when you get into like you know, more of like a little bit of scat and it's got a little, you know, and then boop, boop. Oh, I love it. I love it. It's such fun music, right? Absolutely. And there's like, so there's this like also this element of, for a lot of folks, and there's even been research into how certain types of music impact how we manage and navigate pain in our body. Mm-hmm. And it was really interesting. It's like when it's more emotive music or like really sort of sometimes even what people might say is sad, but it's like when the lyrics are resonating maybe with your feeling.
Right.
And you don't, it's giving it words. Mm. Have you experienced that too, by chance?
Oh, definitely, I have, and I just had a minor surgery recently, and I've used music to kind of help me manage pain and relaxation, and that's kind of where the jazz kind of came into play, because I needed something that would, one, relax me, and I felt like it was stimulating growth, healing, you know, in that physical way within my body and within my mind. So I felt good about it. And it was also nostalgic. It brought me back to, you know, being a kid and you know, having my dad around. He's been deceased for many years. So I think that I was looking for that also in the space of healing. So music definitely resonates with me in that way. And there's nothing like a good old sad love song. We just recently celebrated Valentine's Day. And so there's nothing wrong with a good old sad love song.
There isn't. And you know what's really interesting? So here's one of these great little science bits, guys, because you know I have like this like little useless trivial minutes of things. So love actually has a frequency that we can look at and track, like from a scientific side, it can be looked at, and it's 528 hertz. Now, this is what's really interesting. That exact hertz of 528 is called the miracle frequency, because this is the one frequency that will transform and change DNA.
Wow. I didn't know that. Wow.
And it's the same frequency as love.
Hmm. I guess if it brings you happiness and joy, then it has to be good for you.
I cannot like cheer that comment more.
It has to be good for you.
I know it. So Vaughn, I know that you've been kind of going through your own experience currently of burnout. Can you share with us, what have you been experiencing? Like, how has this felt for you? And maybe even how has this, now that you're sort of experiencing it right now, that you look back and go, you know, I've actually experienced this other times in my life, and this is sort of where I'm seeing some similarities. Like, what is it feeling like for you right now to be in burnout?
Yeah. For me, the way I'm currently feeling, I'm just feeling anxious. And it's not really about anxiety. It's more of like an anxious feeling, like, I got to jump on this. I got to get on that. I got to make something happen. You know, I'm tired, but I still have to function. So I think a lot of times for me, it's managing those feelings of feeling pressured or feeling like, you know, you're up against some deadline that you don't feel like you can achieve, but you have no choice, you know? So it's that feeling like I'm just pushed. I'm in a corner, so to speak.
So, this is like, yes, so much. Yes. I think so many people that are listening right now are probably nodding their heads going, yes, I feel like my back is up against the wall and I'm having to come out swinging to fight my way through everything on my to-do list because I can't stop. Right. And I hear this so often. It's like one of the biggest things that I hear, especially when people are coming to me and saying, I am burned out. I don't know. I've tried everything that I know, stuff that's helped in the past. It's like might be helping, but it's not really sustainable. I just can't seem to keep doing what I'm doing. Right. And I'm not getting where I need to go. And I might be able to bring in some energy for a little bit, but it's not lasting. And it's like, once it's gone, it's like there's less on the other side of it. And one of the biggest things that I hear is, I can't afford to quit my job. I can't afford to take time off. I've used up all my sick days. I've used, you know, paid time off, you know, vacation days. It's like, I need it today, and I'd have to put in an application and I might be approved for it for next month.
Right.
But that's not now. I need it now, kind of thing. And so, you know, this, I hear this a lot.
Right. And I'm sure you do.
One of the biggest things that I tell people is like, look, let's think about this for a second. If you quit your job, if you change your job, if you do anything that's going to alter your finances, is that actually going to serve you right now? Or is that going to create more stress?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I think about that, too. And I've thought about it. I was like, oh, this would just be a great day just to quit, just to quit everything. But what that has a cost to it. Quitting has a cost. And that would definitely bring on more stress. So there has to be a better way of managing your output and your stress level. And it's just, you can't quit. And, you know, and that's the other thing. I'm not a quitter. I've never been one. And it's just one of those things you kind of have to work through. But I think that's why it was important for me, after having a conversation with you at that meeting where we met with Profound, that talked about finding the tools that helped you to manage your burnout, as opposed to just succumbing to it and feeling like, oh, there's no way for me to get out of this. There's no way for me to win. Yes, there is a way. You just have to find the tools and the tools that work best for you, because everybody's different. Everybody requires a different thing to make them feel better in whatever form, but it's really about finding the tools.
It is. And it was what can be really frustrating. And I talk about this a lot is like, we can intellectually, you know, from the concept position, understand what it takes to get out of burnout. And we hear this big term thrown around a lot. You got to self-care more. You know, you got to get more sleep. You got to unplug from the things that aren't really serving you. Well, that is all great, but it's kind of lip service.
I mean, it is. It is.
I mean, it's not really telling me what to do or what I need to do. And it is so frustrating because, I mean, that's where I was, you know, 8 years ago when I was like decided I was like as burned out as I could possibly be. I was a level 5 ghost pepper. I was a degree of 10 out of 10 in the heat factor. I was there. Mm-hmm. And it was like, there was this one place that was just that dark night of the soul. And you and I kind of talked about this, mm-hmm. where, you know, I got out of the bed. I, you know, basically slid out of the bed because I couldn't stand up. My mom had been there and kind of helped put the kids to bed. And I laid down face first on that hardwood floor and I cried. I just let it all out. And it was like, I got to that place where like no sound was coming out and my body was just kind of shaking. And I was just resigned to the fact that my body was not doing what I wanted it to do. It was actually telling me I had run it into the dirt, but I was mad at it. I was really mad at my body for failing me, for quitting on me. Right. I'm not a quitter. Why are you quitting? Mm-hmm. We don't quit around here. And it was like, I was either going to make it through that night or I wasn't. Mm. And I laid there and I finally just got really quiet and really still. I had let it all out because I'd been holding it in. And I was like, I'm failing. I am failing as a person. I'm failing as a mom. I'm failing as a wife, failing as a daughter. I am a burden on everybody right now. And that is not what I want. That is not the life that I know I'm meant to live. And in that moment, it was like, I'm either going to wake up in the morning and I'm going to figure this out or I won't. It was that kind of night. And it was in that there was just this little crack in the door and there was a little bit of light and it was hope. And right. It was, this is, I love this word. I heard somebody say it one time, this is figure outable. Yes. And I'm like, I'm going to figure this out. I'm not going to quit. I want to be here for my kids. I want to be here for me. And it was like, in that moment, I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to figure it out. Right. Well, and has that been like in retrospect, if you look back over your life and where you maybe identify that you've experienced burnout, is that something that's happened for you?
Absolutely. And I can pick, there are like 3 or 4 big moments where I've had that similar kind of experience. And, you know, where you just kind of had to get to that point where you just can't take it anymore and you push back. And I think it's the pushback that makes people grow from the experience. It's that moment where you have that watershed moment where you kind of, your eyes are opened and you see the hope, you see the possibility, and that propels you to a different space.
Totally. And I love what you said about that watershed moment. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I think, you know, this is something I really struggled with around crying. Mm. And it was, I can't cry because that tells other people that I can't handle, that I'm weak.
Right.
It says to me that I'm weak, and I can't be weak because if I'm weak, that makes me vulnerable. And if I'm vulnerable, that's not safe.
Right. Right. That totally resonates. And, you know, being a man in society where we're taught we can't cry, we can't show any emotion, you can't let them see you sweat, you know, all those old mantras. But you know what? You have to let that stuff go, because I think that, you know, sometimes shedding a good tear just kind of clears out your space, clears out your mind. You've released. It's like when you go see a movie and it makes you cry. There's something that you feel from that actually makes you feel better. You know, there is not, it's not a bad thing to let go, because you're actually just letting go of whatever emotion that triggered this feeling. And I think that it's important to do that. And I think more and more people, one, we need to talk about our emotions as men, and two, we need to share them with people that we care about, and also allow us the grace within ourselves and say, it's okay. It's okay, no matter what you've been taught as you grew up. You know, our parents didn't have a guidebook on how it is to be a parent, you know, but I think they did their best, like current parents are doing their best. But I think that it's a situation where you have to learn to change those behaviors that you didn't think were possible. And, you know, vulnerability is also a good thing. You know what I mean? Because it shows you that there's an opportunity for growth, and there's an opportunity for potential and development in a different way. Sure, you strip down your armor, but guess what? What's underneath there? You know, there's something underneath there that could take you in a whole other place.
Oh, it is. And you know what? We talked about tools, right? So here's a tool. Mm-hmm. When you allow yourself, now you heard the word I used, allow. When you allow yourself to cry, to release, that is exactly what it is. It is a release. Because when you hold all of that in and you're trying to control it, it is telling your body and your mind a couple of things. It's telling your nervous system, this isn't safe and I have to hold this in. Yes. And it's telling your mind, I can't trust myself to let go because there might be something that might happen if I do. Mm-hmm. And that is a lot of times a very false belief. You know, even if you just start crying in the shower, because then, you know, it's all watershed together.
Right. It's all water.
But it is a nervous system regulation tool. Our body is the most incredibly attuned feedback system. And when we feel that urge or that need to cry and we're suppressing it, we're stopping a natural occurrence. It is a stress relief valve. It is like when the tea kettle whistles.
Yes.
And it only has the belief and the story around it that you give it.
Yes. Yes.
So if you chose the story that it means you're weak and you're unsafe and it's just, you can't do it, you got to suck it up, buttercup. That was me. I can own that. Yeah. Then you chose that. You agreed to it.
Right.
But you can also disagree with it and choose something different. Like, this is my body saying, we just need to release some stress. And this is totally cool. This actually makes me stronger. And it's going to release some really good feel-good endorphins when I get done. And my body's going to relax. And I'm going to be able to think and resolve whatever I'm experiencing in a much clearer way.
Oh, absolutely. I 1,000% agree.
Well, Vaughn, I know that we decided we were going to have this conversation today around accessibility and mm-hmm. how accessibility factors can lead to burnout. Or if you're in burnout and you're constantly fighting for some accessibility needs, it feels like you're in this daily battle to say, can I please just be able to enter the dang building? Yeah. I'd like to come in. I'd like to spend some money here. And by the way, for all of you guys out there, if you are also in the disability group, we have some massive buying power, fellas, ladies, individuals, humans. We have some serious buying power, and accessibility to businesses and services and public spaces impacts where we spend our money. Mm-hmm. So let's kind of dig into this, Vaughn. What are some of the biggest accessibility factors that you feel have either led to burnout for you or feel like this is keeping me in burnout longer than I need to be because this is a daily thing or a constant thing in my life?
I think for me, I think it's like a combination of things, because, and it's almost like I liken it to microaggressions and in those things that, you know, slowly tick away at you, there's little pinpricks that, you know, kind of they demean you, they make you feel less than, they hurt you in some physical way, in mental way, even if you don't acknowledge it at the time. Over time, these things build up. So for me, accessibility, it's a symbol of saying to me, I'm not welcome in this location because they don't have a ramp. There is no elevator. I can't get in this space. So that means you don't want me to be there. And that might not be the case, but that's what it looks like to me. And, you know, as Carol Jean just said, there's a whole lot of us out here in the disability community. There are over 1 billion disabled people or people that identify as people with a disability in the world. So if you're talking about 1 billion people in the world and something like 62 million people in the U.S., so that is a lot of money to be left on the table. We're consumers. We like products and services and goods and all those things that everybody else likes. We might use them or adapt to them a different way, but we still use these same things. We still buy in soap. We still buy toilet paper. We're still doing all the things that everybody else does. But if I cannot, for me, if I can't get into your business or your location to do my shopping or to have a nice meal out with friends, I'm not coming. I'm not supporting it because you've told me that I'm not welcome here. And it's just a matter of getting some accessibility and understanding the need for it and wanting to welcome everybody to your establishments in whatever form.
Yes. And I mean, we can talk about physical locations. We can also talk about online locations.
Online too. And you know, these companies that have not adapted their websites and made them accessible for people with, you know, any kind of vision or hearing or any, you know, neurodivergent situation that makes their sites inaccessible, because that's important too. And if you know, I work for a company and it's been my mission in the last 3 years to make sure that there's closed captioning in all of our meetings so that, you know, if there's someone with, you know, some kind of hearing or any visual thing or neurodivergent situation that they would need the captioning, you know, it would only make it a better experience and every meeting should be accessible.
Oh my gosh. Yes. And I even go in and, you know, say, hey, this is a checklist. Let's go through this and let's evaluate what accessibility things do you have for your team members, you know, as team leaders, project managers, you know, as directors, how can you make sure that everyone on your team has a place that they can communicate with ease? Because if we think about our communication, you being in marketing and printing, advertising, this is just, I love having this conversation with you right now. So Vaughn, if you would suggest, you know, to companies, but also just like some smaller entrepreneurs, because a lot of times there's also, you know, as a solopreneur myself, I found there is a barrier for me to get some accessibility features that I want to have to make sure that my things are more accessible for people in my community, but there is a financial barrier. You know, what are some things that you talk about, or what do you say, like in marketing and things like that? Here's some ways to create accessibility that you may not be thinking of.
Right. Well, I think what could also help too is it's also about gaining some knowledge and doing some research and into finding those, you know, finding out what you don't know, because a lot of times we don't know what we don't know. And if you may only be in your space, like for me, I have a mobility disability. That doesn't mean I know about every other disability that's out here. I know what my personal experience has been about. And but I also feel that it's important for me to learn about others to make sure, because if I talk about it being accessible to me, it also has to be accessible to everybody else. And that means if you have your business, do some research to find out what will make your website more user-friendly for everyone, you know? And if are there barriers around it? Are there grants that could help you support your business if you need more financial support in buying these tools? Because there are grants out here for business owners and also for people with disabilities I've been researching lately that can help you to finance that. And, you know, if you're getting your business loans, you know, when you're writing your business plan, add some more money to that to talk about accessibility, to add more financing around accessibility in every way that your business will operate, whether it be for one of your employees or whether it be for one of your customers. Because I think that if you don't have a wonderful customer experience, or if you're not a good employer and your employees don't feel like they're welcomed and it's an accessible place for them to work, then your business is going to fail.
You know, and you just said something really important, Vaughn, and you know, that's why I love talking to you. You always just drop these beautiful, like little knowledge golden nuggets. And you said when people don't feel welcome.
Yeah.
And in my global research, the number two biggest unmet nourishment need across all neurotypes and accessibility is belonging.
Yes.
And when we don't feel like we're welcome, when we don't feel like somebody has even said, hey, here, come in the door.
Yeah.
Right? Digital door, physical door. When you can't even open and access getting through the door, do you feel welcome?
Yes.
Vaughn, what are some ways that for you personally, you're like, this is when I feel really welcome? This has been an experience where like I showed up and I felt like this was so welcoming. Like it was essentially people, just the energy that you felt was like, Vaughn Harris is in the room. All right.
Yeah. You know, actually, I have to say that I feel like it's been our experience with Profound. I've met so many wonderful people, professionals like yourself and so many others that are part of the group now that have taught me so much. And I've learned so much from all of you and all of the things, because it's a group that has come out of, you know, someone's desire to bring us all together as a community and as a network of other professionals doing what we can do to help other people. Because it's not just about us and our own concerns. It's also about reaching back and helping others along the way. And also educating the general public on the fact that, yes, there are a lot of people out here with disabilities of all sorts. But, you know, we're all individuals that bring a lot to the table, both professionally and personally. And I think that that experience has really opened my eyes so much in the last 2 years that I just want to shout it to the universe that, you know, it's here, we're out here, we're doing this thing, and we're making inroads and strides, and it's gonna get bigger and bigger. And that's the thing, that because I know when I think about what it was like to not feel represented as a kid, you know, I never saw anybody that looked like me. There was never anybody else around, you know, that had any kind of disability. So I always felt isolated and alone in that part of myself. But, you know, you have to keep going, but you don't have any role models, anybody to imprint after and to say, well, if that person can do it, I can do it too, you know? And so what I do in a lot of my motivational speaking is I reach out to kids groups and even some adults to tell them, you know, this is a big world out here. And, you know, just because I have a disability doesn't mean that I can't achieve the things that I want to achieve in life and in my career, because all things are possible. And I was talking to someone else recently about it, and he said, well, is it good to tell people all things are possible? Because sometimes you fail and sometimes you things don't work out for you. I said, but if you don't walk into the world thinking that things are possible for you, you have already failed. You have already failed. There is no way you're going to achieve anything if you actually feel that certain things just are not possible for you. Certain things are not accessible for you. Certain things are not capable of you being a part of it, because that is not, that's not a winning solution. You gotta walk into the world feeling that you're a part of it and you're gonna be successful, because you, if you don't, you're always gonna fail. And so that resonates with me. And I feel like the group, you know, Profound as a group and as a network has been, you know, it's been inspirational to me. It's been encouraging to me. It's been a force of an army of people behind me and in front of me and pulling me along, pushing me along, doing all these things. And we do it to each other and we try to support each other. And I think that that's been the first real experience of me feeling, one, totally self-actualized in who I am as a person and a person with a disability, but also, you know, claiming that, owning that, in being that and trying to help other people to understand that. That's more important than just my own acknowledgement of it. It's also about, you know, seeing all these Generation Z folks that are just coming up, and they don't even use all these labels that we've had attached to us all of our lives. They're on this whole other world of thinking, well, this is who I am. This is what I do. This is what makes me special. I use all of my abilities and my inabilities even as my superpower.
Oh my gosh. So much yes to all of that.
Yeah.
Because when we do, and it's not just, it's just not the element of I belong to a specific group. I feel like I found, you know, my people and mm-hmm. they get me, and I'm not having to like explain everything to the nth degree, because it's like, right. They get it, right? Yeah. It's there the shorthand, no which, yeah.
There is no explanation. You just walk in, everybody knows. Okay, all right, good. It's, you know, yep. And you feel good about it. It's like going to your family reunion, right? Where you know, you might not know everybody in the family, but you know that everybody in this room is connected in some way. And you know, you have a certain kind of laugh and you have a certain kind of way of being, and you don't even have to explain it. Oh, you're just like grandma so-and-so. Or you're just like uncle whatever, whoever. You know, there is something that's relatable in the conversation with everybody. And so, and it's just like what they always say, find your tribe. It's about finding your tribe, because sometimes it's not your actual family, it's your found family. You know, and how we come together. And I think that that's what belonging is really about. I love going into my office and feeling like I'm a part of that machine, that entity that is, you know, TBWA, because I do feel like, and part of my job is all about increasing belonging, because I manage all of the employee resource groups that tell you, okay, you know, your culture is important to us. Your culture is celebrated by us. And we believe in everything that you bring to the table. And so that is important to me. And so belonging is definitely, that's definitely key.
And you know, it's also like, as we start, and I'd love to kind of just start talking about, you know, how do we manage stress during burnout? And one of those things is having a place where we feel welcome, where we feel like we aren't expending all, and especially when you're in burnout, to be able to have conversations with other people where you're not having to constantly think about what you say and describe stuff. It's like there's that shorthand. So it's a much easier, more empowering and energizing conversation, actually, when right. You found your people. But the other side of that is, do I feel welcome within my own space? Do I feel welcome within my own body? Mm. And I think sometimes that's a really big part that we don't look inward when we're looking for, do I feel welcome?
Right. I agree. And I've had, you know, over the years, I've had, you know, several love-hate relationships with my body. And, but I understand, you know, as I get older and as I mature, that I feel like it's important to say, okay, this is what we got. This is what we have. This is the body that you have. This is the mind that you have. These are the things that make you great. These are some of your, you know, your pitfalls, but once again, this is what you have. Now you have to make it the best space that you can be. I try to be as healthy as I can be. I'm trying to eat better. I'm trying to get more sleep. I'm trying to find, you know, creative ways to relax and to meditate and to sleep better. Because for me, how burnout manifested for me was it would cause insomnia. And my brain was always going because I was always trying to be two steps ahead and planning the next day, or, you know, what do I have to do next week? Or, you know, oh, I got a trip coming up next month. You know, I was always ahead of the game. And I guess part of that's being in advertising, where we're always working so far ahead for our clients. So for whatever campaigns that they're going to be launching. So we already think in that way. So I think that just trying to slow it down and find moments of relaxation and listen to your body cues. You know, there's a reason why, you know, you have headaches. There's a reason why your stomach hurts. It's not always about popping a pill or some quick fix. There's an actual mind-body connection that's causing some of these things to happen. And I think that just in listening to your body's needs.
And, you know, when we talk about burnout, one of the areas that is most dramatically impacted that can enhance and sort of perpetuate burnout to a greater degree is our sleep quality. Yeah. And I think you just really touched on the element that comes into play for a lot of us. And it's that thought loop, that overthinking. As we're trying to go to sleep, our brain in like the survival heightened awareness safety mode goes, okay, if you're already struggling with burnout, most likely your cognitive load has been impacted. The amount of things that you can handle at one time in your brain, your executive functioning, you know, step A through D to get to the outcome that you need, those can be harder to navigate. And all of those things play into the fear that shows up at night when we're going to bed, because I got to get up in the morning and I don't want to be behind the eight ball, as they say. I want to make sure that I'm thinking of all the stuff that could possibly happen or what I'm responsible for. And I don't want to drop the ball because I don't want it to be more uncomfortable if I forget it than if I just sit here and think about it. And then your brain kicks into this spiral of all the stuff. And then your body's moving way up here. And it's like, oh, your shoulders are up by your eyeballs. And all of a sudden, you can't go to sleep because in that state, your nervous system is in fight mode. It is in flight mode. You know, it is in this activated state because we're trying to make sure that we're navigating the things that we're experiencing or the fears of what we have coming. And what you talked about is so key in managing stress during burnout in particular, is being present and recognizing that the fear and that future pacing. We all tend to get into that habit. Like you talk about, like in marketing, we're constantly planning, you know, a quarter, two quarters ahead. You know, we're creating stuff out here. But you're not creating it out there. You're actually creating it in the present.
Yeah.
And so many, we live in the past. Our minds are living in the past. Our minds are living in the future. And very rarely are we living in the actual present moment. And the present moment is where we have the most agency, the most power, the most energy. We talked about this in our 9-day energy up level. Where are you? Are you sending your energy today into the past, thinking about all the stuff that's happened, or into the future, worrying about the things that might possibly happen? And you are not even using the energy you have in the moment, where you have the most agency and power to create what's going to happen in the future.
That's true. That's all true. Wow. It's mind blowing.
Vaughn, what would you say has been maybe the hardest or the biggest challenge outside of sleep? Because I know that that's a big one. But is there another layer that managing stress during burnout that's coming up for you right now?
For me, it's about facing it and understanding that it is burnout. You know, and, you know, upon meeting you, I didn't really understand the name for it. You know, trying to understand why I was feeling the anxiousness of it or the stress level of it was so high when it's something that, you know, I've experienced, you know, I've worked this way all the time. So it's like, well, why is this time different from any other period of time? You know, and are there other factors that contribute to it, you know, in the mind-body experience? Like what is that? So knowing what the issues are was a bigger thing for me. And now finding out what triggers those things, you know, what brings upon these feelings. And so that's been the biggest hurdle for me. And I think that, you know, from researching and finding the tools and meeting people like you and you know, talking it out has helped me to manage it in that way. And where I felt like it was just, oh, this is just you. This is just in your head. You're just feeling this way. There's nowhere for you to turn with it, but there actually is.
There actually is. And if you are nodding and you're going, oh my gosh, yes, Vaughn, I know what you're talking about. And you're looking for those tools, you're looking for those resources, please reach out to me. I have a whole host of them. I have something called the Unveiling Method that takes you through this entire process. And we have all kinds of assessments that help you uncover and unveil the areas that might be creating the biggest energy drains, that might be consistently showing up for you, that you feel it, but you haven't had the words to put to it yet. Right. We've got some amazing tools that can help that. But, you know, like I say in my book, Unleashing Sustainable Energy, you can have all the assessments in the world, but if you don't know how to apply them and you don't have the framework, they really don't serve you. So in the Unveiling Method, we have not only the tools and the assessments that start to look into all of these areas of burnout for you, including your sensory system. We look at and have the framework that will take you to the restoration, because I want everyone to be an energy master. Now, we have mastered the heck out of where our energy flows out. We have mastered that side of things. And I want to be able to help you master how do you bring it in and how do you continue to sustain it and actually allow that energy to become this beautiful, like Tesla engine, where it is creating and building and thriving with the energy that you've brought in already. So you're not working so hard to constantly bring it in.
Right.
Now, Vaughn, what would be your biggest insight to share as you've gone through a recent surgery? You've got a lot of accessibility things that have come up lately in your world. I mean, and I don't mean lately, I mean, like they've been there, they're continuing, but like when you're in burnout, they feel so much bigger because you feel like you're operating on this energy deficit, right? This depletion place. And so they feel even bigger. To somebody who might be experiencing something really similar to what you're going through right now, what's the biggest insight that you'd like to share with them?
Insight throughout the whole process and this whole experience has been for me to know that you can get help for this too, just like you have, if you have any other physical or mental issues or concerns, you know, your health is the most important thing. And managing burnout is a part of having better health. And so think about it that way and don't just push it aside and say, oh, this is nothing, it's not important, because it is important. And knowing that, you know, it's a part of you living your best life and being the best part of you. You know, get that help that you need because it's out here for you. There are lots of people out here doing this work to help all of us, not just, you know, not just certain people have access to this, because everybody can access this part. And I think that, and it doesn't have to cost you $1 million. It's just something that you can actually do for yourself. And there are simple things that you can do. But the key is recognizing that there is an issue and knowing that there's services out here to help you.
Oh my gosh, yes. And you know, that was one of the things, honestly, when I started this journey 10 years ago now, I couldn't find anything. I didn't even realize I was in burnout. I just thought I really stunk at adulting and just had not figured it out. I thought I am failing as a human. Yeah. There is something that is deficient or not good enough about me that everybody else has figured it out and I haven't. I had no idea what I was experiencing was burnout.
Yeah.
And if I'd had somebody say to me what you just said, Vaughn, I would have gone, oh my gosh, I never thought to look outside of myself. Because mm-hmm. I think so often we think we've got to solve and fix all of our own problems.
Well, we can't. We can't. That's why we're not all doctors, lawyers, you know, psychiatrists, you know, coaches like yourself. You know, everybody's not that person. So sometimes you need somebody outside of yourself. You know, if I could play a green instrument, I'd be a musician and I'd be traveling the world and, you know, doing that. But that's not what I do. Everybody's not an advertising professional. So you have to find these people that can help you get to where you need to get to. And there are a lot of resources.
Oh, you do. You really do. There are. There's tons of them. And now, more than ever, you can actually find them a little more easily. Yeah. They're more accessible, which is really nice.
Thank you for the internet, for bringing us all together and making these things happen, because I think it's important. And, you know, I'm thankful for your show because, you know, you touch people's lives and you definitely have an impact because, you know, once again, it's about having the knowledge and knowing what's possible. And you're showing people what is possible.
It is possible. It is absolutely possible. I'm in year 4 of living burnout free for the first time since I was 6 years old. That was almost 40 years.
Congratulations.
And I've been through, thank you. And, you know, a lot of times we get really scared and we think, there's going to be, I lived this way for like the first 2 years and 3 years, really. It was just in the last year that I began to trust that my burnout restoration was going to last. There was this little part, and I didn't even realize it. There was this little part in the back of me that said, oh, you got to be careful. You got to really pay attention to everything because the slightest little thing's going to send you back there and we don't want to go there. Right. And so I was still in this heightened sense. I wasn't really fully relaxed. And this year has really, the consistency of it and the experience of actually looking back and saying, I've been through some hard stuff in the last 3 years and I didn't go back into burnout. Mm-hmm. That has allowed me to trust my body for the first time in a long time, to trust my mind and to trust myself. And to trust that I now have the tools and I have the skills and I have the strategies created that will keep me out of that. I mean, last week I had a pretty scary health event. Tuesday night, I lost consciousness and fell over the side of my bathtub.
Oh my God. Wow.
And I didn't know why. And I, here's me. Okay. So when it happened, I woke up and all I saw was white. And for a split second, I thought, am I dead? Right. Why am I upside down?
Right, right. What's going on?
Like my body, nothing was registering yet, but my mind had started to kick in a little bit. And it was in that moment that I then realized that the white that I saw was the skin mat on the bottom of my bathtub. And I thought, how did I get here?
Right. Oh, wow.
And I was so, so disoriented. I couldn't even, and I was in the bathroom by myself. And so I got to the bedroom and I was still so out of it. I couldn't even communicate with Josh fully what was going on. And I was so exhausted. I just went to sleep. So I didn't go to the emergency room till the next day. I know, right? But okay. I didn't have the cognizance in that, you know, in that night to say or to communicate, because I tend to, under stress, I have selective mutism. So I really was having a hard time even thinking and articulating. So the next morning when my heart rate and my blood pressure were erratic and going all over the place, I realized that whatever had happened had activated my POTS, because I have postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. And so I'm like, okay. So once I kind of put and processed everything, I said, Josh, you got to come home from work and I have to go to the emergency room. Wow. But it was through that process. Thank you. But it was in that I could have been really scared. And I'm not going to lie there. I definitely got scared. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is the worst case scenario, is that my POTS has activated again and I'm in this activated flare up and I'm not going to be able to manage my energy. That was my first thought. And then I went, wait a minute, hang on. We know how to do this. I know how to do this. And it's okay if I have to take a couple of days that's slower. that's what I need. And that doesn't, and I didn't actually feel that pressure to have to do everything. I feel like somebody had their foot on my back pushing me. Mm-hmm. And that was a really big change. That's one of the biggest things I've experienced recently. So these things are possible.
Yes. Wow.
Now, Vaughn, you do some coaching. You do some amazing speaking work. You get your podcast. You do all this wonderful stuff in the world. How can people connect with you? Or where do you want people to come find you?
Find me on LinkedIn. I'm in LinkedIn, and I'm sure she's going to share the link to it. I'm always there. You know, if you want to listen to the podcast, it's totally for entertainment. We do movie reviews. It's called Beer, Bourbon, and a Movie. Beer, Bourbon, and a Movie. And that's on Spotify, that's on Apple Podcasts, it's on SoundCloud. So, you know, we're getting ready to do our Oscar show. So, as I said, you know, it's one of those things that it's a good outlet for me to have that because it's just totally for entertainment. I've been doing it for 6 years with my podcast partner. But, you know, like I said, in this space, in this work that I do, you can always find me on LinkedIn. And like I said, let's share ideas. That's how I met Carol Jean. And I think that it's important to meet other people because I think that's how you make changes in the world.
That is where you find your tribe. And that is where you go out and it ripples into the world when you combust and ignite with another person. Vaughn Harris, thank you so much for being here. Guys, down in the show notes, you'll be able to find the link so that you can go connect with Vaughn, reach out, have a conversation. Don't just lurk. Don't just follow, but actually send this wonderful human a message and connect. Absolutely. You won't be sorry, I promise. If you aren't sure if you're in burnout or you're starting to suspect you're in burnout, please go take my spicy pepper burnout quiz so you can find out exactly which level of burnout you're in today. The reason that I created this quiz is because so often we just want to feel better. Our only goal is, I just want to feel good. This sucks. And I don't want to feel this way anymore. But we don't have an idea of where you are in burnout. And the reason I say it's so important to know where you are right now and what level, what spicy pepper from a poblano pepper, where it's a little bit of heat up to that ghost pepper level 5, where you're so hot, you're not. You need to know where on that scale you are because I don't want you to fall into that restoration illusion trap that so many of us, me included, fell into, where a stress changes. It decreases, something is eliminated in your life, and you start to feel better. So you believe you're no longer in burnout. And if you've been in a level 4 habanero or you've been a level 3 cayenne pepper for so long that that's just the norm, any decrease in stress can make you feel so much better. And it can make you think you're completely out of burnout. And I don't want that to happen. I want you to be at your absolute thriving best energy mastery because you've got passion, you have purpose, you have a dream in your life. And my friend, I want to help you be the energy master so that you are living all of those things. Because you know what? They're already yours. You don't have to earn them. And the world is waiting for you. Take care. I'll see you on the next episode. Bye-bye.